Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back, Sports to the Max. News Talk 830 WCCO. Twins in Boston tomorrow, 6:05 first pitch. They take on the world champs. Joining us right now, one of the Twins minor league managers, is a familiar name, Toby Gardenhire. Has been in the system for a bit as a player and now as a manager, and he spent this year down in Florida. So we got a lot to talk about. His dad's team played the Twins today. He manages a Twins team, and oh yeah, that hurricane coming through Florida. Toby, thank you for joining us. Do we lose him? No. Oh, is he there?
Yeah, you hear me?
Oh, yep, got you now, Toby. How are you?
Okay. I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. What was this year like for you down there?
It was good. It was a lot of fun. You know, we had a lot of really good players come through here, and we had a pretty good team, so it was a lot of fun.
When you get – you've moved around the system. How does it work when a guy starts managing in the minor leagues? Every year, are you up for a different assignment? What do they do?
Not necessarily. Last year I was in Cedar Rapids managing. The year before I was down in the GCL. But, you know, it all kind of depends on the circumstances. This year I got bumped up here to Fort Myers when Tommy Watkins got sent up
to
be the big league first base coach. So it all kind of depends on the situation and, you know, the circumstances at all the different levels.
When you take this team, they tell you what? Are they saying, here's the five guys we want you to focus on? What is it?
Well, you know, you do have some guys that are basically priority type players that are, you know, that are high picks or guys who, you know, that they think are going to be really good that we kind of keep an eye on. But at the same time, at that level, you know, you're pretty much looking at everybody could be a prospect. So you're just trying to make all the guys better and, you know, do the best you can getting them up to the big leagues.
Do they get so many at-bats and so many opportunities that you almost can't help but figure out who a prospect is? Or is it easy for guys, I don't want to say to hide, but do you see many times when a guy goes to another organization and they play him at a different position and he flourishes? Or usually do you have a pretty good IQ on him?
You know, you see it. You see a little bit of both. Some guys you see and you just kind of know right away, hey, this kid's a stud. He's gonna be really good. And then other guys, you know, it takes them a little bit more time to develop. You know, and sometimes it takes guys more bats than others to start to figure it out a little bit. And you know, you've seen it. There's a couple guys up there, Randy Dobnak, who the Twins have up in the bullpen right now. Yeah, he pitched with my team in Cedar Rapids all year last year. That was a kid we got from independent ball, you know, that nobody drafted, nobody signed, nothing, you know, and then he comes in and pitches and he's been great and he's been great all year and he made it all the way up to big league, you know, so guys like that, sometimes they kind of hide a little bit and then they make it. And then you got other guys like Bruce Dark Gratterall who, so you see him throw, you say, okay, send him up there.
Tell me what you saw when you saw him. I saw him for the first time like a lot of people did yesterday and you go, all right, that's electric. Can't teach that after about two pitches.
Yeah, I always liked having him pitch when it was always funny when I was managing, he was pitching because, you know, the people don't really know what's going on. And then all of a sudden, you know, he starts throwing 99, 100, 98, and you start hearing people whisper in the stands and everybody's going, ooh. So, yeah, it's pretty entertaining.
So when you get a guy like that, it's obvious that he has the upside, the ceiling is high. Now you want to make sure that you nurture him just right so that they don't have any arm trouble, and then mentally you want to remove all the blocks. Where do you come in on that? What is it that you're trying to do when, you know, it's been established that this guy is off the charts in terms of potential?
Yeah, you know, it's the development process. That's kind of what you do. You just have to get him out there on the mound. You work with him on all the different little aspects of pitching, whether it's holding runners or, you know, locating his pitches or trying to take a little bit off his breaking ball or whatever it is, try to get a little bit of movement. And, you know, you just work little things like that. It's kind of the small details that end up making these guys really, really good in the big leagues. And that's your job as a coach in the minor leagues, is to help them develop those little details to get them to, you know, pitch to the best of their ability.
Is it a lot of video work in this day and age, or do you try not to clutter them too much with it?
We do a lot of video work. Yeah, we do. We've got, you know, there's a lot of technology involved nowadays as opposed to like when I was playing. There's a lot of video. We have, You know, we have Rapsodo, we have the TrackMan system, we've got all the different analytics tools that we use. And it's all pretty cool stuff, and you can learn a lot.
Now, one of the names that, of course, we keep an eye on up here is Royce Lewis. You've crossed paths with him since your time in Minnesota a few times. What do you see from him? Where is he at?
Yeah, I've had him for a couple of years. I had him last year in Cedar Rapids. I had him there this year in the beginning in Fort Myers. He's really, really athletic. And, you know, he's a very good shortstop. He keeps getting better there. He's got all the arm strength in the world. He's just a super athlete, you know. He's strong. He can drive the ball. He can run. He can do a lot of things. So, you know, the more he plays, the better he's going to get. And he's going to be pretty good.
What's the one thing, if there is one thing, that holds a guy back, whether it's a top-end prospect or whatever? Is it, is it confidence? Is it the ability to hit a slider? Is there one thing that you usually say, boy, there's the hole that we're going to have to figure out a way to get through?
Well, you know, I think it's something a little bit different for everybody. Some guys it is maybe a confidence issue where they just can't, you know, they just don't have that confidence and they can't put it together. And if they can figure that out, then they can be really good. And other guys, maybe it is more of a physical thing. Like he can't, you know, he struggles with the slider. He struggles with off speed or can't catch up to the fastball. His bat's too slow. You know, everybody's a little bit different, but that's kind of what you do as a minor league coach is you try to take that thing that they don't do as well and you try to help them get better with that. At the same time, trying to take their tools that they're good at and improve those.
Can you speed up a bat very easily, or is that one of the toughest things to do?
It's tough. It's definitely tough. But, you know, we got a lot of different things that we do to try to help these guys speed them up. Whether it's our strength coaches who have all different techniques and, you know, they work on the guys, you know, whether their backs are tight or their hips are too tight, and they try to loosen up the hips and loosen up the back to get the bat going faster through the zone. So, you know, we do a lot of work at that kind of stuff.
What's it like when a Nelson Cruz comes down or C.J. Crone or somebody like that?
Oh, it's awesome. It's great. You know, it's great for the kids, for one, to get a chance to play with those guys. And, you know, we had Nelson Cruz down there, and he was talking to all the players. He was talking to Trevor Larnach a lot about hitting and about his everyday routine. And, you know, that's just a pretty cool opportunity for a kid to get a chance to sit there and talk to a big leaguer like that who's been around and done it all.
You mentioned Larnach, who we saw at Oregon State against the Gophers at one point in time, but obviously he put up some numbers for you guys this year. It looks like, you know, he's big and he's strong and he's athletic, and it looks like he's, I don't want to say he's fast-tracking, but he's on track.
Yeah, he can really hit. You know, he understands his swing really well. He's very smart. He works really hard at it. And, you know, he's a great kid, so I think he's going to be able to do some big things.
Now, you got to study your father as well when he was managing. He always used to talk to me. Of course, he still is managing the Detroit Tigers. Twins play today, but he always talked about you got to make it so that when the guy comes through the door to the clubhouse that he feels comfortable, because there's enough distractions and enough pressure on him. You got to create an atmosphere where they feel comfortable and they want to be at the clubhouse, because that represents a place that they feel good about. What does that mean to you? Because I know you follow some of those same footsteps in terms of setting the stages, setting the tone from a culture standpoint.
Yeah, you know, I was lucky enough to grow up kind of in the clubhouse with my dad managing, and then before that with Tom Kelly managing, and, you know, to see these guys and the way they kind of handle the clubhouse. So I feel like that, you know, from my dad, I learned a lot about how to keep the clubhouse light and do those type of things. And that's what I try to do with these kids down here, because it's a long season and you're playing in Florida and it's 100 degrees every day. And, you know, we don't get 50,000 people a night or anything. You know, you're playing in front of small crowds sometimes, and you got to figure out different ways to motivate yourself. So if the guys aren't having fun at the ballpark, then it makes it tough.
Now, you're also dealing with weather. They shut your league down when this hurricane started to come through. What does that look like, and what happens? Obviously, it's on the other coast, but it affects any team in Florida that would be participating in. When did you get the word? What's that like to be involved in something like that?
Well, it was tough, you know, because we saw the hurricane coming. And, you know, and then we started to hear rumors about the teams on the other coast. We're talking about sending all their guys home. Daytona sent their guys home right away. Palm Beach, you know, the ones that were really in the path. And then once you start hearing that, then I knew that we might be in trouble. So we played a couple games. And then the next, I want to say we played Thursday night was our last game. And by Thursday afternoon, they had already decided that they were going to, but they wanted to make it, you know, the big thing is the player's safety. So to get all the players out of the state of Florida was pretty important. And in order to do that, you have to make a decision early so they can get a plane ticket, things like that. So
That's different, isn't it, to have a whole season? I mean, just to say, okay, everybody's done.
Yeah, well, it's tough because, you know, we earned a playoff spot. So yeah. We were prepping for the playoffs. We had our starters all lined up. We were ready to go, and then all of a sudden the hurricane comes in, and they say, no playoffs, see you later. So that's a tough speech to deliver to the guys at the clubhouse.
Now, they've changed fall ball a little bit because they don't wait as long to go play, and they send out, is it fewer players or what is it? But they started earlier in September, right?
Yeah, they're doing the Arizona Fall League early this year. So I believe it starts right away. I want to say it's like the 17th of September or something like that.
And how many players would you send to that?
We've got, you know, I don't know the exact number off the top of my head. We have three pitchers, I believe it is, from our team here in Florida yeah. State League, and then a couple position players. I think Kirloff and Lewis are going over there, and I'm not sure off the top of my head, but I think we got five or six.
And what does that facility do for you guys in terms of having everything there? And, I mean, you can't ask for much more in terms of an all-encompassing facility like you have.
No, it's wonderful down here. You know, you have the big batting cages, and you play at all the big league spring training parks. So, you know, you have all the tools in the world to help these guys get better. So it's a really nice setup down here.
What's it like for you when the Twins play the Tigers like they have the last 4 days?
Well, it's fun. It's fun to watch. You know, we went and watched the game this afternoon, and the Tigers played them pretty tough.
Yeah.
You know, which is good to see because, you know, I know my dad, they've struggled a little bit this year, but I think they're improving and they're getting better. So that's good to see, but it's also good to see the Twins winning games because they, you know, they're in the playoff hunt. So it's fun to watch.
Like, are you thinking along with him? Like, are you thinking he'll make this move, that move? But, you know, there's so much that goes into a manager that people probably don't realize. We just talked about, you know, the culture of the clubhouse. And all. Then you get to, okay, now it's game time, and there's a game day operation mentality that goes in, and that's where your chess match starts. Do you watch him and try to figure out why he's doing what he's doing?
Yeah. Well, I think that's just a, you know, like a baseball man. Like you said, that's a baseball manager yeah. thing. I watch baseball games, and I'm always trying to figure out what they're going to do and what the next move's going to be. So no matter which team it is, I'm always trying to figure out where they're going to go in the next move.
Yeah, and then you realize how complicated it gets because you're watching an at-bat, but you better have somebody else going, okay, who's in their bullpen right now versus who we got on our bench? Not that you haven't gone over this before the game, but you better know right now in real time. And it's always interesting to see, you know, do you have a good bench coach? Do you have a good pitching coach? Does your pitching coach dialed in so he knows who'd be better the next inning based on who they've got, based on what he's seen? That's what really becomes fascinating, doesn't it?
Oh, that's right. You know, there's so much that can go into it and so many decisions you can make. And that's one thing that I've learned here in the last few years managing is that you have to come up with these decisions before the thing happens because you have to kind of expect something to happen or you have to, you know, you have to be ready for anything. And then you already have to have your mind made up what you're going to do because if you wait till something happens and you say, oh, maybe we should pinch hit a guy, it's too late. You know, you have to have it there. I've been through it. I've been on both sides of it. Now you got to be ready.
Okay, here's the one I've always wondered. You go out to take a guy out of the game, a starter, and he doesn't want to come out. He thinks he's on the verge of something good. A lot of times they do. Do you set rules in place, and do most managers just say they have the meetings, and it is so ingrained in their head that, hey, I don't care how you feel about it, you hand me the ball. We'll talk about it later. Is that kind of a rule of thumb?
It's kind of a rule of thumb, yeah. Everybody does it a little bit different, but yeah, that is something I talk to my pitchers about a lot is if I'm going to go out there and get them, and, you know, it's not just my decision. It's not just me. It's me, the pitching coach. It's our staff. We talked about it, you know, and that's what we're going to do. So there's no arguing about it. So usually I actually call down to the bullpen before I get out to the mound because if I get out to the mound and then wait and then try to call the bullpen, then I give the pitcher a little bit of time to try to talk me out of it, and I don't let him do that.
You've learned that, huh?
Well, you were
young, but you remember Jack Morris, right?
That's right.
Yeah, that's fun stuff. Well, Toby, appreciate it. Now, you're not in harm's way, or at least it looks like on the map you guys are going to be spared or saved anything significant, right?
Yeah, it looks like we should be okay. It looks like the storm's starting to go north now. It's sad. It's sitting on the top of the Bahamas. It's been there for all day, you know, which is tough. But it looks like it's getting ready to start going north now, so I think we should be okay. We're getting some rain and some wind, but it's nothing crazy.
You can take care of Dad's house, right?
Yeah, I went over there and strapped all his bolts down, and I took all his furniture inside. I did all his crap for him. He was calling me. He was panicking.
Well, he got that cell phone with that camera, so when you were younger, he knew exactly what you were doing before you knew that he knew what you were doing.
That's exactly right.
That's another story for another time, though. But, hey, Toby, thank you. It's really fun to catch up with you. And you think of the world of your dad. Make sure you tell him hi for us as well.
Yeah, I certainly will. Good talking to you.
You bet. Toby Gardenier, managing the Fort Myers Miracle. I've never heard of such a thing when a whole league gets the season called off because of a hurricane. I mean, it makes sense, right? It's at the end of the year, so there's only a few teams involved. And those teams would be in the playoffs. And if you've seen enough of these guys, they got enough at bats, et cetera, you go, look, we've seen enough. Whether or not they get to play three or four more games doesn't really matter to us. But, boy, it is that is strange, man, when you say, let's just shut the whole league down, get everybody out of town before. I've never been – if anybody's ever been in a hurricane, call us, 651-989-9226, 651-989-9226. I've never been in one. And or close to one, or you know, maybe even seen the effects of one. At least that, not where I've been there. You know, shortly thereafter. But I've always wondered what that's like. I mean, we see blizzards up here, but that's completely different. I think. Do you just sit and wait for the wind to stop, or what do you do when a hurricane comes through? Or you know, there's a weird thing when you're in the eye of the storm and everything's calm. But you know you're just going to get brutally beat on, it looks like, at some point in time once the eye moves out. And I don't know how that works. 651-989-9226. If you've ever been in or near or experienced a hurricane. Not far away, Shannon Currier, the head coach at Concordia University in St. Paul. They opened the season on Thursday, and he's got a great story to tell. Stay with us on Sports to the Max. I feel kind of bad that I love to watch things in real time of hurricanes coming in, because I know the destruction is going to be massive, and there's nothing good that can really come out of it except maybe communities come together and rebuild, et cetera. I guess that would be the consolation prize. And yet I'm enthralled by it. Last night I was so disappointed trying to watch. You know, the Weather Channel is not that good in terms of technically what they've got in terms of reporters and boots on the ground. And so I was watching CNN because generally they're really good with storms, and it's not that they weren't good. They had nothing to report. And I assume that they just couldn't get signals out of the Bahamas last night or video. You know, they had a little phone video here and there of some of the destruction, and that scares you a little bit because you assume if they could, they would, and you were not seeing a lot of stuff coming from the Bahamas, which was almost scarier because you said, that must be because they don't have power or they can't transmit or they can't get to the satellite or whatever it is that they need to do to send video, because you would think a news gathering operation like CNN would know how to access and procure and get that video on the air. And so as I watched it, it was a very depressing live news broadcast, because they were going from there to West Texas where they had the shooter. And the young girl, 17 months, Anderson, her name was, that had some fragments and her lips were, they were repairing her lips and her tongue and all those things from bullet, a stray bullet of some sort. And after a while, you go and watch that stuff for so long and you just go, I can't do this anymore. It's just depressing. You know, a shot of the same phone video of somebody in the Bahamas that was, you know, it looked like their house had been flooded out, and they were in for tough times. And then going back to West Texas, and you just after a while you go, you know, give me something, you know, give me a comedy channel. But you really understand the value of sports and entertainment and all that, because the real world sucks us dry, doesn't it? It takes us and it beats us up, and it introduces us to, and the news does this, and we do this because we show you the. You know, whatever it is that's the most magnificent of the day, and a lot of times that comes in the form of tragedy. Man, do we need entertainment and sports and things like that to look forward to. Man, do we need rock concerts and movie theaters and baseball games and football games and stuff like that. Because without it, man, we are really, I mean, what you have to look at is just, it's a recipe for depression. And it's a look at the worst side of the human condition. And it can just flat out wear you out. And even though we're curious about it and we want to know more about it, and like this hurricane, I mean, I love the feeling of being at home and being safe and watching the weather coverage on it, where you're not in harm's way, but somebody, and they're showing you whatever it is, the most drastic, nasty, whatever it is that they can find. And I don't know why we're drawn to that, but, you know, the same reason we want to see videos of car crashes, I guess. But if you watch it long enough, that same rhythm, that same repeated images, etc., takes you to a state of depression. That's why we're here, to lighten the day with funny jokes. Because here's the one that I told earlier to Ron Sher. I mean, that's a good joke. That's a really good joke that you could use. This lizard walks in, and I got it from Dave Lee. This lizard can't change his spots, and that's problematic. It's problematic because he needs it as a defense mechanism when he's out there. He needs to camouflage and be able to change on the fly, and he can't do it, and he doesn't know why. So he goes in, knocks on the door. The veterinarian opens the door and says, come on in. He says, what's the problem? He says, I can't change my spots. And doctor says, boy, lizard like you that can't change your spots, that's problematic. He says, you bet it is, doc. I'm vulnerable out there if I can't change my spots. So he examines him. He looks at him time and time again, and finally he says, I think I've at least figured out what the problem is. And the lizard says, what is it? And he says, I think you're suffering from reptile dysfunction. See that? I told you. The lighter side. That's why you come to me, folks, because I am funny and I have that funny sense of humor. And I shared this with Liz Collin on the news tonight. You know, last week I did a lot of work out there at the State Fair and on TV and radio, and I had a lot of really good one-liners and things that created, I thought, a belly laugh and shticks. And I did karaoke, and they played it on the 10 o'clock news. And we did this unicorn bit where we threw rings around a unicorn. And on radio, I was spot on. I was funny. And I thought for sure when I got back today to the office that there would be numerous either phone calls or email inquiries as to how they could bring me out to, you know, some event that they could showcase me at, that they could put the spotlight on me, that I could perform for, I don't know, a first communion, a bar mitzvah, a circus, whatever it was. I thought that somebody would, numerous people would want my talents because I gave them the full menu during the course of the fair. I gave them all kinds of, whether it was me singing, making people laugh, whatever it was. And I did not have one call or one email. And I just, as I said to Liz, I said, I have to assume that's because it's a holiday, huh? And she said, you just keep assuming that, Mike. Shannon Currier next, and he's got a good story to tell about his football team. Stay with us. Welcome back, Sports to the Max. Twins win today 4-3 over the Detroit Tigers. Move on to play the Boston Red Sox right here on CCO tomorrow. 6:05, the first pitch of that one. Fun stuff. Joining us now. I like that music. Joining us right now, the head coach of Concordia University of St. Paul, Shannon Currier. Been there for a little bit, a couple times over, and always fun to visit with him. Shannon, how are you, and what's it like this time of year for you?
I'm doing real well. I guess it's a good night because I just got home. My wife had a plate of meal in the microwave, so I'm pretty blessed to come home.
For a football coach, that's like paradise, right?
It really is. It was a tough lunch today. It was a busy day, and sometimes you don't get a lot for food. But, it's a good time here just because we're a couple days away from game day, and that's what we all live for.
What's training camp like at Concordia?
Well, I think it's a little bit different than other places. You know, we like to change it up a little bit and not be in the same monotonous schedule from the time we start camp through the first game. We take our team on a retreat to Camp Ripley every year. This year we brought the players in on August 11th, a Sunday. And then the 12th, we packed in a lot of things that we needed to get done during the day. And then we were able to get to Camp Ripley that evening. And we spent camp Tuesday through Friday there at Camp Ripley. Friday we went up to Brainerd, and we are able to play on their field or have a practice on their high school field. And from there we go to Cragen's and spent an afternoon on the lake doing some tubing and just letting the guys
relax
a little bit. Yeah.
You've done this, so though, for a while because you've done – isn't this part of this coming from Remembering the Titans?
You know, it started back my first stint at Concordia. We took the players to Cosmos, Minnesota.
Cosmos, Minnesota, your hometown, yep.
My hometown. So we started there on air mattresses and wrestling mats in the gymnasium, and we've progressed now to the training sites where we have barracks and beds, and it's a lot nicer setup than we used to do. But yeah, so it's similar to Remember the Titans. In fact, I read Gary Barnett's book. He had a book called High Hopes, the head coach at Northwestern years ago when they first won their Big Ten championship. They went to Camp Kenosha, Wisconsin, and we kind of modeled the initial trip after stuff that they did there. And I feel it's really helped our team come together a lot more than it would if we just stayed here in St. Paul. And then we certainly get back to St. Paul and have still 2 weeks left to training camp. So we get a variety of different things to do, and camp's been a great year so far.
When you get away like that, do you set it up so that the offense is with the defense? How do you try to create a culture?
Well, first off, we have a leadership group of 12 players that the team, the coaches, kind of selected. They then draft the rest of the players, so each leader oversees 8, 9 kids on the team. And then we put different leadership groups into the barracks. So we had 8 different barracks where there's about 23 or 24 beds per barrack. So then there's a couple different leadership groups in each one of those. And, we do a lot of football. And yes, yeah, so they're definitely mixed, between different offense and defensive positions. And, I think our players know each other really well just because they get a chance to spend all that time together. And if we were to have fall camp strictly at Concordia, we don't have the capacity to put all the players in one dorm. So it's really nice just to take them away from all the outside distractions. And we're, from the time we get up in the morning, through the day, it's pretty much all team building, football. We incorporate a couple of the exercises that are available to us at Camp Ripley, the leadership course, the obstacle course. The obstacle course involves the Sergeant Gunny Ferguson, who's a drill sergeant for the Marine Corps, and he puts them through the ringer. And just seeing the kids get broken down in that setup, and then they have to rely on each other to get through it all. That might be one of the more grueling things that's done. And also, I think it's one of the things that helps bring the team together too. So this year was a really good camp. We had a good mixture of veteran leadership that really invested in new players and young players, and then we had humble freshmen come in that, they respected our leadership. So we've really gelled well, and we've been able to retain a real high percentage of our players. And we're real excited about, the group that we have.
Well, for a freshman coming in, what do you want that to be when they get off campus? Are you relying on the upperclassmen to get them through that or what?
Yes, sir. There's a lot of freshmen nowadays, and probably for many years, when they come to fall camp, they don't all make it. College football is really tough. Not as tough as it used to be.
Yeah, what would be that? For a kid that walks on campus as a freshman and fully intending to play football, how many make it through their senior year?
I would say you're doing really well if you have a 50% retention rate from the freshman class to the senior year. If we have 20 seniors in a year, that'd be pretty great. Typically, you're probably 40 freshmen coming in a freshman class, and we want to keep them all, of course. But if you're keeping 20 of those kids, you're doing pretty well. So there's just a lot of different variables. Money's an issue. How do they pay for school? And that's part of it. You have girlfriends involved. You have family situations and illnesses and deaths and things like that. Then there's kids that maybe don't get the role they want. They want to be a starter, and it takes them 3 or 4 years, and some kids just aren't willing to look at the big picture and see that college football is a benefit to them, in their life after college. And they don't recognize the value that college football brings. So they give up on the dream too early. And so you just have a lot of different factors that come into play that help, I guess, the kids make the decisions to stop playing. But when they come in as freshmen, we think it's important to get them off campus because they can't quit at Camp Ripley. There's no way to get home. It's a chained in, locked up fence. So kids can't just leave if you're at, for in St. Paul, a kid can get his car and head home, and that's happened before. So we feel like once we get them to Camp Ripley and they make it through that first week, they're connected, and our retention rate is really, really strong after that.
You get transfers, too. You have a number of kids that transfer into Concordia University.
We do.
What do you look at when you decide if it's right to bring in a transfer, and how do you end up with them?
Well, we're always trying to get the best possible student athletes we can. So if we see kids that can can help us win football games and make our team better on the field. You know, obviously then we want to ensure that they're going to do well academically, and also they're going to be a good fit from a culture standpoint. So, you know, there's a lot of quality transfers out there. You know, California is a great state that has many junior colleges. There's not as many here in the Midwest in terms of junior college football. So many of our transfers are California kids, or they ended up at a California junior college. And it's just, you know, sheer numbers there. And they're all looking to go someplace, and we trying to find the best value. You know, we have scholarship money, but we want to spend it wisely. And, you know, you want to get a good deal, just like I guess the NFL does when they sign free agents and things like that. So, you know, the junior college kids are shopping around trying to get their best deal, and we're also trying to get the best fit, the best value. And, you know, typically it's because we're maybe sitting in a position. So we're trying to add more depth or competition there, and that springs us to making that decision to try to find a transfer. And this year we lost two corners, you know, from last year, so that was a need here in early summer, throughout the summer, and we ended up, you know, getting two transfer corners. We wanted to transfer tight end last spring, so we got a transfer tight end. And it always takes time for those kids to come in, and if it's at, you know, at the University of Minnesota or Division II, anytime you get a transfer, there's an acclimation period where they're trying to make that transition to your program and, you know, build relationships, understand what's expected of them, you know, learn the balance of the academics and football and all those things. And typically they get better that second year that they're here compared to the first year.
Like, you get a kid, there's a kid named Darian Manning in your program, right? A quarterback.
Yes, sir.
And yep. He played down in Texas, and he threw for 4,000 and some yards, 41 passing touchdowns. And you go, well, we've been led to believe if you grew up in Houston, Texas, and you have those kind of numbers, you know, you're going to A&M or Texas. How do you end up with him at Concordia?
Well, I think in Division II, you're trying to find kids that are capable of playing Division I, but for whatever reason, they didn't have something that kept them from that. Maybe they, you know, the program they played in, or maybe they bloomed late in their high school career, or potentially they didn't have the academic profile for Division I. Division I and Division II have different academic expectations by the NCAA. So a qualifier sometimes at a Division II won't maybe have a high enough qualifying score to be eligible at Division I. And that's not the case with Darian, but, you know, we're trying to find kids that somehow are missed by Division I schools. And, you know, we felt he was one of those guys that he's a big kid that can move and had a good arm and had the production that you mentioned. And we're willing to go anywhere to recruit. You know, we certainly want to get the best players in Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois. But at the same time, you know, if we can get somebody that's going to make our program better from any other state, you know, we're not going to be biased, and we're going to take kids from wherever.
And last, you open on Thursday night against Sioux Falls, right?
We do. We started at 6 p.m. We're calling it St. Paul Day. We're also honoring a former coach that passed away that many know in sports. Coach Russell Geary was a All-Pro defensive back, and he passed here this past spring. So we're kind of combining honoring Coach Geary at the same time, trying to connect with our community of St. Paul and have some special people in St. Paul attend the game as well.
Shannon, appreciate it very much. We'll stay in touch with you, and good luck on Thursday night.
I appreciate your time, too, and look forward to talking real soon.
You bet. Shannon Currier, head coach at Concordia University in St. Paul. They open the season against Sioux Falls coming up on Thursday. For the best coverage of college football, you go to Steve Thompson on Saturday afternoons. We'll talk to him about just that next. I'll join Dave tomorrow. Our first Old Dutch Team of the Week will be unveiled at 7:40 tomorrow from the Lennox Premier Dealers Heating and Cooling Storm Center. We got basically a severe thunderstorm watch for the metro area and beyond. Some, I think, are turning into warnings. Steve Thompson, did you say out Douglas and Stevens County?
We have a number. Stearns, Todd, Douglas, Chippewa, Candia, Ojai, and Swift Counties. For another 15 minutes or so, but those are moving right down 94. I've been keeping an eye on it now for a few hours.
94 coming east, huh?
Yeah, coming right toward the cities. And we would expect at some point tonight, weather will be front and center here on
probably
CCO.
Probably during your show?
Yeah, I would assume so. I'm sitting in for Henry tonight between 9 and 1. But looks like weather is moving in to the area. And if you're on 94 headed for, say, Alexandria, Fargo, et cetera, you're going to run into some big thunderstorms tonight. We'll keep an eye on that. We'll talk Twins, Vikes, Twins, stay on
nice
a roll.
Nice win today, Steve. Huh?
Yeah, it was nice a good one. Win. You know, Max Kepler is a guy who, hard to believe, he wasn't an all-star in Cleveland. That was highway robbery. But it just seems like, you know, day in, day night in, night out, a guy steps up, and Kepler had that big two RBI single late in the game to give him a win.
Left-handed pitcher again. You know, how about this? The other night, Saturday night, he's hitting – he's third in the American League at home runs.
Right.
Excuse me. And he's hitting eighth in the order. You know, on a given night, that's what they do.
Well, and the game has changed so much. How many times this year has Mitch Garver caught and let off?
Never would you see that back in the day.
Yeah, they've kind of thrown out the book.
I heard Corey and Dan talking about today is that they're on track for the fewest stolen bases ever in Twins history. They're 26. 32 is the lowest to date, so depending on what happens here the last month. But I didn't realize they had slowed down that much.
Yeah, the approach of these
guys. Buxton being out, too. Buxton did play today. He played the last inning for defense, but it was good to see him out there.
Yeah, you don't want to run out of innings. And these guys now come up from the minor leagues, and they want to get the ball in the air. They want to get that ball in the air. It's crazy.
What can you say? It works, right?
Yeah, they're playing great. Can the pitching hold up? But Michael Pineda, I mean, this guy right now, he's probably their top starter.
Yeah,
wouldn't you say, Mike?
Odorizzi is pretty good today. Odorizzi if the playoffs started today.
Yeah.
And Pineda second, and third would be, I guess, Barrios. But, you know, Barrios with the bullpen ready.
Yeah, and then, of course, Kyle Gibson on the injured list right now. And he's been fighting health problems since before the season started. You know, he came into spring training really tough stuff there.
And Martin Perez, I wouldn't discount him, though, as a relief pitcher in the playoffs because he's got pretty electric stuff. It doesn't sustain itself for that long. But for an inning, two innings, maybe three, you could bring him in the fourth inning if you're in trouble.
And then they got the kid Gratterall who can throw it through a brick wall. Boy, he throws hard.
Tobey Gartenheuer on who managed him. And, I said to Toby, I said, you know, you watch two pitches and you can see – this is different.
You can't teach that.
No. And then he's got a slider, a little bit of this and that. And, you know, yesterday, of course, you got to go out there and uncork it a little bit. But you go, whoa, make sure you keep that arm strong.
Yeah, I don't know about those minor league radar guns, but didn't he touch 103 on one of the guns down there?
Yeah, it was some ungodly number, you know. You almost have to in this day and age, though, because if you can't throw it by him, baby, it's going a long way.
Oh, Max, you've been to the batting cage, and they say they throw mid-eight, you know, the fast machine at a batting cage, mid-80s, maybe 90.
Yeah, take a peek.
What does 100 look like?
That's exactly what I think. Every time I hit off one of those cages, I go, okay, I'm just getting a bat on this. What does that look like? Steve Thompson will explain next to WCCO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.